Well, thank you for your time.
Sorry, I'm a little jet lagged.
Don't worry.
You know, it lasts for a long time.
By the time you get over it, you have to go back. Yeah. So, Last Starfighter. I mean, looking back, what was it like to do something that was, I guess at the time it was revolutionary with what it was doing? You know, with the, I guess it was the early days of computer graphics.
Well, the truth is that on the set, we had no idea what was being done in post or currently. So we didn't really, all we knew was that it took a long time and that we had to restrict a lot of our, we had to restrict a lot of the action that was CGI. Because, you know, it just, you can only make so much. It took so long to program, it took so long to render that you knew you could, it's not like a regular film where you know you have that shot. You can take, you know, you could take 5 seconds, you could take 20 seconds, you could take, it wasn't like that. It was like you had a specific amount of time. And so it affected how you would shoot the live stuff. But like I said, we had no idea how it would turn out. All we knew was a totally new process.
Did you find it challenging not really knowing what would be there?
Yeah. I mean, it was described to us by the director. The director, you know, did the best he could as far as, you know, knowing what was happening. Obviously, he has to know because he's the director, but even he sometimes didn't know what it was going to look like. Nobody knew what it was going to look like, so we had to kind of fly by the seat of the pants, as it were, you know, and so, you know, it was quick. I mean, we shot it in 38 days. We had a 10-day pickup week, 6-day pickup week, but 38 days in principal photography, so that's pretty quick. So we had to be able to kind of knock it out.
Did you find that challenging, having to do it so quick?
Yeah, but you know, it's the way it goes. You know, there's only so much you can do. I think I probably over-rehearsed myself. And I used to talk to Preston all the time. I tell the story many times, but I used to, like, drag Preston out of his trailer and get him to rehearse with me. He was totally cool. I mean, he was such a tough guy. He never was like, come on, kid, relax, just do it once, you know, save it. He was like a theater actor, you know, so he's like, I'll rehearse as many times as you want, man. So I've always respected him for that.
Did you find that you were a little bit nervous about how it would turn out in the end, really just not knowing?
Yeah, I had no idea. I mean, because to me it was a really different, quirky film. It wasn't a really mainstream film at all. It was a goofy, kind of tongue-in-cheek thing that, you know, that sort of has to have the right tone, and it could go either way, you know. It could go really mainstream and really kind of predictable and kind of sappy and stuff, or it could be kind of quirky and special, and I was really happy that it was quirky and special and that the people that love it really do appreciate that one.
Yeah, how did you feel when you first saw it?
Well, when I first saw it, unfortunately, I saw a rough cut because, I mean, when you do automatic dialogue replacement, you don't really see the movie in its entirety. You just see sort of black and white clips that are, you know, all of a sudden it'll say, scene missing here, you know?
Yeah.
And the sound is all, you know, different and weird. There's no music and everything. So I saw a good deal of the movie because I was in every scene in the movie. I saw a good deal of it in ADR, so you could not get a sense of it at all because all the special effects that were supposed to be there weren't there. So it was disorienting, and you know, didn't feel like a movie.
Yeah.
So, you know, then when I finally saw it in real life, I saw the final product. Then I was really pleased because I had nothing to compare it to. You know, I had something to compare it to that was bad. So it looks good, so, you know, it looks like it should.
Well, that's, yeah.
You know what I'm saying? It is rough.
I mean,
when you
it
see
sounds,
like a,
you know, if you're not seeing it properly, you wouldn't really have any idea, and then when you see it, it would be.
But I had no experience.
Else.
I'd never been a lead in a movie before, so I don't. You know,
did
I.
You find
I
that a bit of a bit of pressure on you? And
yeah, it was a little nerve wracking, you know. But, again, I didn't know what the how they would sell this thing. You know, it's it could have easily just been a very cereal box kind of. I don't know. In America, we call them cereal box because it's just this. It's a way of promoting a film that is sort of not as cool as it could be.
How do you feel about it looking back now?
I feel it's like it really holds up. I mean, it is obviously, it has so much 80s stuff in it. You know, you look at the kids and their clothes and their haircuts and their and the things that are going on, but and then some of the music, but it's not specifically 80s. You know, it could be any time. You know, it could be any. And that's what we were hoping for.
If anything, when I watched it, it made me miss having arcade games.
Having a what?
Having, you know, arcade games.
Oh,
whereas
yeah.
Everything's just so different.
Yeah, I know.
The excitement of going to see something.
You get your, you know, pocket full of quarters and, you know, sometimes, like, you know, $3 was a lot to spend on a, you go to an arcade and it's like $3 with a quarter. If, like, you can't get it going after $3 with a quarter, you shouldn't be playing anymore. You're wasting your money. You know, you could go broke.
Yeah.
And now they have these video games you can just, you know, people do for, you know, hours and hours and hours at a time.
And how do you feel with, you know, people still remember the movie? Are you happy that it still gets well received and you've got you know, younger fans coming in?
Absolutely, because I feel like the spirit with which it was made has sort of made that transfer. And the people really, they think it is as special as we do.
Yeah.
But I didn't know. I know what it was like when we were filming it. I didn't know what it was going to be like once it was finished. And because it did not do that well at the box office initially, you just didn't have that much encouragement about how great it was. But then what happened was that people rented it later on. That was just at the advent of home VCRs. It was a fairly new thing at the time. And you could, a family could go, you know, well, what are we going to get for the kids? And then they'd go get Last Starfighter, and people would see it every week or every day or every whatever. So it became this thing that so many people saw and yet had no initial release buzz.
Yeah.
You know, but for the following years, everybody in America saw it, and all over the world, ultimately.
Yeah. Do you have anything you'd like to add?
How do you feel about it being compared and contrasted to Star Wars? Because I think I was watching the DVD extras and whatnot, because this is one film that I wore out at my video store. I watched it more times than anyone else.
Our film, or?
Yeah, The Last Starfighter. And, I heard something like people were comparing it to Star Wars, saying, you know, sort of a Luke Skywalker type thing. How do you feel about that?
Well, I always feel like it's not really like Star Wars at all, because it's in the world and it's in our world, and it's not the charm of the movie is that Alex is a regular person, and Maggie is a regular person, and the alien world is always a point of irony. It's always a point of not irony. And there's always the difference between this and science. It's not really science fiction. Star Wars is science fiction because it's its own world. It's not Earth people coming into contrast with another world. It is its own world, just like Star Trek is its own world. So, you know, Star Wars could exist. That story could exist in any world. It doesn't have to be on that planet. It could be someplace else. But the collision of the alien and the human is really what's happening in our show. So I don't really, you know, Luke Skywalker is kind of, I don't know. I mean, I suppose you could compare, but people used to always ask me that. I don't know. I didn't feel like Luke Skywalker. I didn't feel like, you know, he was an actual hero. He was a guy that's like, you know, I'm going to go through the training, I'm going to go through the thing. I was just a random guy that was good at this video game, and then I'm forced to do this, and I don't want to do it. I'm like, take me home! You know, which to me was the funny part. It's like, that's what a normal person would do.
Yeah.
They would chicken out. It's like in Monty Python and the Holy Grail, you know, where the guy's always, run away, run away.
Yeah, I think actually, thinking back on it now, this movie actually has more similarities to Tron than actually Star Wars.
I never saw Tron.
Well,
so.
I mean, the whole premise of Tron was this guy gets sucked into the world of a video game.
And effectively,
this is what happens with you. And that you're good at this video game and you're sucked into the world of the video game. So I think there's more similarities there.
I suppose, yeah.
Yeah.
But I mean, that's the thing, is that any skill that you hone by way of virtual computer technology, any skill that happens, most of the time you think, what are you going to do with this? So you can move your thumbs, so what, you know? It's not like you can chop down a tree, you know? You're moving your thumbs, and that's it, you know? So what? So there was the inherent sort of uselessness of being able to do something in a video game, because it's all just in your brain, it's all just in your hands and your thumbs. And then to find out that it's actually, in The Last Starfighter, it actually is the physical, the same physical skill and requirement that would do something like run a spaceship, or, you know, be a gunner on a spaceship. I mean, I suppose they have some simulators on you know, in the Navy or whatever, in the Air Force or whatever. It's a similar type of thing, but in my world, the appeal of any type of video game or something is sort of like, oh, this is so cool, I'm going to go kick someone's ass and everything, but it's not real. You know, I'm going to go rob a bank, I'm going to go, you know, do all this crazy stuff, and it's just this. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So, Last Starfighter, there was there's no disconnect. The skill is actually the skill.
Yeah. Is that it for you?
I think so. Is there any movies that you've done that you don't look as fondly on as Last Starfighter?
You stole my question.
Movies that I don't like? Oh, I'm not supposed to say that, you know, because then...
Well,
you know,
not that you don't like it, it's just that you're not as fond of them as you are of Last Starfighter, because I think there's a bit of a deep affection there for you.
Well, I did a movie that nobody has ever seen that is not that good of a movie. It was called Bluebird Horror.
She's the film connoisseur, so she's going to go try and find
it. I have no idea.
That movie was just suffered from no coverage, is what it did.
Yeah.
We were shooting on a very quick schedule.
Yeah.
And it was this crazy, crazy concept. And, you know, the script looked okay to me. My part was fine. I read it. I'm like, oh, okay, I'll do this. It's no big deal. And when I saw the movie, I'm like, wait, they didn't have anything to cut to. So...
one of those things.
It's one of those things that, you know, you just have a hard time getting. When you can't get it on film,
yeah.
The final thing, unless it's some really, really, you know, arresting script and really some great film style, you know, like if you're Jim Jarmusch and you do everything in one take or whatever, like in Stranger Things,
yeah.
It's unless that's your style, if you don't get coverage, then you're kind of screwed.
Yeah. And, I mean, what else, not for ones you maybe didn't really like, but what are other highlights with films you've done or other work you've done?
Well, I did a movie, you remember, I did fondly? A Jaws movie, Jaws the Revenge, which was possibly one of the worst sequels ever. But, you know, I liked all the people that were working on it. They were all good people.
There's something fun about
I liked them a lot.
That
I had
movie.
A good time. But you know, most people don't like that movie very much. Again, it was the kind of a script where I read it and went, I don't have a problem with this, this is fine. I realize it's kind of a silly concept, but the writer had sort of tweezed it and justified it in a way that you could buy it, you could buy into it, because that's the way all movies are. Most movies are outrageous concepts, but if you can find some way to get into that world. There were all kinds of problems that we had with that movie involving the actual special effect of the shark and that thing. And they didn't use CGI. They used a big puppet. And it was just a monster. I mean, it was a dinosaur. It was just a disaster. And so we went under, you know, we went over budget and we went over time. And, you know, we had to kind of work with what we got. And then they ended up switching a lot of the orders of the scenes around. They weren't in the original order, so that all the dramatic work, all the narrative work that we've done to try to get into those scenes doesn't apply. So you know, Jaws: The Revenge was not regarded as a great movie. However, Michael Caine did save my life. I always tell the story of Michael Caine saved my life. We're sitting in a boat, like a rowboat, not a rowboat, like a little tiny motorboat, and there was a battery pack at the bottom of the boat. And I had no idea how much, you know, voltage you need to run one of those big-ass cameras, because they were big back then, and they were heavy. It was the camera, the cameraman, and me on one side, and Mario on the other side, and the boat was going, and then they flipped it around to get, turn around to get on me, and they put Mario and the cameraman and the camera on that side, and me on this side. So the whole front of the boat just went down, and Michael Caine was standing on a barge about 3 feet away from us, because it's like, we look like we're out in the middle of the ocean, but the whole crew was on the barge, right? And the camera guy throws the $300,000 camera onto the barge, like just hoping to God somebody will catch it. And the front of the boat goes down, and the battery pack stays in the bottom of the boat. And Michael just reaches in and grabs me by this, and just, get the fuck out of the boat, you know? And he yanks me out of the boat. And I didn't know what was going on. I was like, thanks, buddy. No, but I don't know if I would have been electrocuted or not. I'm not sure. I don't know how much stuff they have in there. But
I think there's a good chance.
Yeah, I would say
that was pretty badass of old Michael Caine.
Yeah. Actually, you almost had the bit of a Michael Caine voice there when you actually did that impression, which I thought, oh my God, he does impressions too?
That's what I do. That's what I'm doing right now. I'm playing Johnny Cash in New York. We're doing a pop Broadway show, and I play Johnny Cash. You got to be able to do that.
So, do you play an instrument as well?
Yeah, I play guitar.
Okay. How long have you been playing?
40 years.
40 years? Wow. That's a long time. It's a lot longer than I've been playing. But I haven't been alive for 40 years.
But, you know, at the time, Johnny...
We were talking about electric and guitar.
Oh, yeah, the guitar.
Yeah, so I play, but I, you know, what I have to play is very simple. What I have to play for the show is very simple. But the show's called The Million Dollar Quartet.
Okay.
And it's quite fun. It's quite good. And it's Jerry Lee Lewis, Elvis Presley, Carl Perkins, and Johnny Cash, and Sam Phillips. And it's a play about them in 1956.
I want to see this.
It's fun. It might tour and come to Australia. I probably won't be on the tour, but I'm in New York there right now. Okay, here we go. I gotta get my picture taken.
Okay.
The name of your show, huh? You know, Jerry Lee was called the killer.
Yes.
Jerry Lee Lewis was called the killer. We have a line in our show. Easy killer.
How did you get involved in the show?
I was doing a play, and the girl that I was doing a play with, her name was Negan. She was working with a writer, and the writer was coming up with this concept. He wanted to come up, do a jukebox musical about this night and do a rockabilly musical, you know, because there was a Jersey Boys was a big deal, and he's like, this Sun Records stuff is way better music than Jersey Boys, you know, so it's like, let's do that. And so he put together these readings, and she knew I was tall and play guitar. I had a beard and, you know, long hair and stuff, so I didn't look like Johnny Cash at all, so... They brought me in, and I just did work on the early readings, and, you know, it took a long time to develop. It took like 2 or 3 years actually to develop it into a play. And then we did workshop plays. We did, you know, 06 we did one in Florida, and 07 we did one in Seattle. 08 we started in Chicago, and we've been playing continuously since then. So we were in Chicago for like a year and a half, or a year, and then came to Broadway. We were on Broadway for 15 months, and then we moved to Off-Broadway, and we've been there since August.
I really want to see this show.
It's cool. It's really cool. Because it's all real. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's not like a show where there's like, you know, dancing. And it's the music is totally real. You're going to see a band, but the band is just these superstars that just were hanging around in a room. You know, there's this great story of like Jimi Hendrix and Miles Davis and John McLaughlin, and they were all just playing together sometime in like the late 60s. And you know, how would you like to be there? You know, you'd want to be there with those guys. And that's kind of what this is. These guys, just, and you know, it's all, you know, Johnny, the guy playing Carl knows how to play the guitar, and the guy playing Jerry Lee plays. We have a drummer and a string bass player, and that's our orchestra. Mm. So basically, there's eight people on stage, and that's it. And it's a full on, you know, rock musical. It's a rockabilly musical.
So,
I don't know,
cool.
You a rockabilly girl? You like that stuff?
I do.
All right.
You've just completely told me I want to go see it.
You should. I mean, you can YouTube us, and you know, there's certain things. We did David Letterman.
Look that up, yeah.
You know, we did David Letterman, and you know, there's a million YouTube things of us doing various deals. There's a couple of fake people, but you'll know who they are.
Okay.
there's a group that calls itself Million Dollar Quartet, and they're like some guys in a garage that do all of our songs, and it's like, dude, what are you doing?
I'll find the root deal.
But we're the one. Million Dollar Quartet Live. Million Dollar Quartet, yeah. Broadway, Million Dollar Quartet,
awesome.
David Letterman, you know, whatever.
That's great. So, congrats on doing it.
Know,
that's awesome.
If you want to, you know, you can, if you're on your show, you can grab pictures from this, and you know, then you can go to YouTube or something, grab some pictures from that.
Try and put something up on YouTube.
You know?
Yeah.
I do also a bunch of interviews on that website as well, talking about it. But, you know.
I'll probably wrap it up, or you probably want other things to do. Do you want